When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe Rimmer, and today I'm joined by Ian Doyle. How are you, Ian?
I'm okay, yourself?
I'm not too bad. And Theo Squires, how are you?
I'm a lot warmer than I was on Sunday. It was very wet and cold at Anfield.
Yeah, it's that sort of that time of year, isn't it, Theo? But it was quite routine on Sunday, which was good. We all like a routine win. Doyle, just how routine was the routine? A couple of goals ruled out early doors, but it felt like they got the job done without too much hassle.
It wasn't routine, because they had to work hard for it. First 20 minutes was a bit of an arm wrestle trying to work out what Brentford were going to do. And then it became obvious they were going to sit back, play on the break and look for some set pieces, which is what Toulouse did and what Luton did and what I suspect quite a lot of teams will be doing coming to even just playing Liverpool at home this season. So that's something that Liverpool are having to get used to. But yeah, when you look at it overall, 3-0, clean sheet, about, you know, as comfortable as you're going to get against Brentford, I think. They're not a team that gives away too many goals, or by which I mean they're not a team that gets tonked very, very often.
Weren't they on, this would have been a fifth consecutive win for them?
It like was, that? But then if you look at the, I'm pretty sure they drew at Arsenal, didn't they, this season, 1-1. They should have beaten United at United. They won at Chelsea, which, to be fair, they always seem to beat Chelsea. So they've had some good results, and they drew at home against Tottenham on the first day of the season as well. So they're no mugs. They've been in the Premier League a couple of years now. But what impressed me with Liverpool is that they, going forward, we know what they can do. We've seen that, and they got three against Forest, they got three against West Ham. You know, the scoring goals now against these teams, but at home in particular. But they kept the clean sheet, and there was a spell in the second half where Brentford had six corners in a row or something like that. And, you know, even though I think the score may have even been 3-0 at that time, and just Liverpool were absolutely determined to keep the clean sheet. I mean, Van Dijk had a great game. He cleared one from just off near the line. Alisson made a great save, I think, from Pinnock, from the header. So overall, there was that kind of sense that once Liverpool got ahead, they were going to win. It was a matter of how many they were going to win by. But when they did get the, you know, they managed to get it sorted, they were quite keen. I think they were proving a point with that clean sheet, I think. I think definitely, I mean, we spoke to Van Dijk after the game and he kind of was expressing the importance of clean sheets, this, that and the other as a defender. But you could tell that they were quite pleased with that, especially against the team who Liverpool have had problems with in the past. It was earlier this year, wasn't it? First game of the calendar year, where they were beaten 3-1. And then even when the reverse fixture happened in May, I think it was only 1-0. I think it was a penalty, wasn't it? Nunes won the penalty, Salah scored it. So, you know, it's going to be awkward. But especially after what happened against Toulouse and Luton, I think Liverpool can be more than happy with how it went and with quite a lot of players missing as well.
What I've been quite impressed with this season, Theo, about Liverpool is, like Doyle said down there, the point to prove. And whenever they've had a mini setback this season, they've responded well. You know, that you look at before the last international break, obviously that defeat at Tottenham and then the draw at Brighton, they come back, win the derby and then win another couple of consecutive games. Obviously the past week, the Luton game, I think they can go that way against promoted teams, but it wasn't the best for Liverpool, obviously, to lose. Again, I think they can go that way when you change a lot of players, but those two results together, you didn't really want that to turn into a mini spell, did you? Especially before an international break, and especially when you're coming back in with such a big game against Man City. So it was impressive the way they won to stop any talk of any sort of mini crisis.
Well, yeah, definitely. Like, if City had slipped up against Chelsea, Liverpool going into this break level with them at the top of the table, and that's something that's almost been overlooked with a couple of times they have slipped up. And it was important for them to bounce back and put in that responding that response in a performance. And it's exactly what they did. Like, it was a bit nervous early on. Like, they kept passing it back to Alisson, and Brentford were pushing him hard. And you felt at times there was, oh, it's only going to take one slip up here in treacherous conditions, and we're going to have a real struggle. But then they settled into the game, and it's like the couple of disallowed goals is like, actually, we're playing quite well here. And then when they got the first goal, as Doyle says, you knew which way the result was going to go. But Liverpool have got that fighting spirit now. It's not like last year where any setback and they were down and out, you just knew they were going to crumble. Now they have got that bit more resilience. And you can say that even against Luton and Toulouse. Like, it's only a dodgy VAR decision that stops them getting a point in France. They get the draw at Luton when they've not played well. Like, they have got that bit of grit in them now. When you've got so many players who are out at the moment who would be starting, and when this was a starting 11 against Brentford that Klopp himself said, they're going to have to play most of the game. We don't have much in reserve. We don't have the tall physical players to match Brentford in reserve. That just definitely stood up and been counted. And when you get that win, you're going into the international break, it's a different feeling to what we've had before the other breaks. And you think, City, huge test. Like, even if you slip up there, you've got a few points behind them. At least you've had this win there to make sure you're still just on the coattails.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is that I think we spoke about, well, we did speak about the Toulouse game on Friday in the last pod, but Klopp spoke about the aggression that he thought was missing from Liverpool's game, and that's probably the only game this season where it has been. You know, they have, as Theo said, they've been putting up a fight in all of these games. You look at the Tottenham game when they got beat 2-1 down to 9 men.
Yeah,
that was probably the ultimate example of that, where they were very unlucky not to get something out of that game. But Brentford was a scrap for other reasons. You know what you're going to get against Brentford. Mm-hmm. They're not a long ball team, but they do like to hit it long because they're playing to the strengths of the players they've got available. And, you know, Mbeumo was putting himself about. Van Dijk wasn't having any of it. You know, Matip, when he went near one of the players, he fell over and he seemed to get a bucket. And he took great umbrage.
Yes, yeah.
Which is always funny. One of the funniest sights in football is an irate Joel Matip.
Any emotion from Joel Matip is one of the funniest sights in football.
It's like one extreme to the other, isn't it? It's like he's like so steady and then it's like he's gone. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's what probably impressed me most against Brentford. They got proper stuck in. I know we're going to get onto Endo's tackling a bit, but just overall, they refused to be bullied. And I think last season, certainly as I said back in January, there were games where they were getting overly bullied. And I know the kind of the confidence levels and the availability of the players and all this, that and the other has changed since then. But then it's changed for the better, so that shows you that how Liverpool have improved in the, nearly 12 months now.
Well, I want to talk about some individual performances, but just to keep you there on the availability of players, I mean, it's probably a little bit overlooked that we did our injury roundup before. They've got 7 injuries, some significant ones at that.
I'm assuming that doesn't include like Connor Bradley and Bobby Clark either.
Who were in and around the squad.
Yeah, and would have played some of the games recently, which would have, of course, taken the pressure off some of the players who did play, have subsequently been injured through, you know, playing a bit too much at this, you know, these big games. Constantly, I mean, Klopp's always been talking about that, and we've seen with Newcastle this season, and we've seen, we haven't seen with Tottenham. Tottenham just haven't aren't in Europe, are they? So we've seen with Newcastle. Well, maybe Tottenham because of the way they want to play.
Yeah.
I think with Newcastle, we've seen playing twice a week, every single week is hard work, and it does take a while to get used to it for the players and to build a squad that's capable of doing it. And I think you're right, Liverpool kind of. I think they reached the end. Yeah, I said in my piece in Toulouse, I think there was one rotation too many.
Yeah.
That was partly because they were the only players that available.
Yeah.
Then they had even fewer.
I mean, yesterday, the 11 they put out was the only 11 really they could have put out, wasn't it?
There was Diaz, there was Elliot. Yeah. Was that it?
Senior wise, yeah. You'd have had like one kid on the fringe.
There was 3 20-year-olds, of which Elliot's one, and there were 4 teenagers. Mm. And you knew quite well the likes of Trey and Yodi, great. You know, great moment for him to be in the squad at 16 years of age, but he was never getting on.
Yeah.
And the fact that it was 3-0 towards the end, it allowed him to get McConnell on. So, again, it was his Premier League debut. Good moment for him, but an indictment of the way things have gone in terms of injuries and availabilities for Liverpool at the moment.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's talk about some individual performances, Theo. Let's start with Salah, who scored two of the goals. Doyle, I know you're writing a piece sort of saying he's gone under the radar this season a little bit, but he really has, hasn't he? I mean, I think before that game, before the Man City game, he had more goal involvements than anyone in the Premier League. Then Haaland overtook him again with his couple of goals in that game, but. I mean, with Salah, he just quietly goes about his business, doesn't he? He keeps doing it. I don't really know what to ask you about him, but just talk, say some nice things about Mo Salah.
He's a very, very good footballer.
Yeah.
He scored a lot of goals and will continue to score a lot of goals. It's when he's put in this form, you think, surely you don't go to Saudi Arabia at the end of the season. Surely you want to have another go at winning the Champions League, winning the Premier League. Like, he's only 31. I know we've been saying
he's playing like a 28-year-old. You know,
yeah, like when we've had Liverpool go to
3 years different.
When we've had like Liverpool,
that's
go
a
to
lot of years in football. That's like that's quarter, of your, not quarter, fifth of your career. Mate.
Go on.
What, go on. No, Theo, go on.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say when like we've seen Liverpool play the bigger teams in Europe, and they've got Zlatan Ibrahimovic who's in his late 30s, early 40s, or Lewandowski, Messi. The comparison is, well, can Salah go and do it? He's proven that he can. You don't want to see him go to Saudi anytime soon. You want to see him keep doing this. And the fact that it's only Erling Haaland, who is this robotic striker, who's stopping him getting golden boots at the moment, shows that he is that leading star in the Premier League. He's going to get his 200th goal for Liverpool within a couple of weeks, you'd imagine. Whether he can do it at the Etihad, that will certainly make headlines. He's just got this all-round game now, doesn't he? The fact that he's getting all these assists as well as the goals, and he's getting the goals in the important moments. Like, it would have been easy for Liverpool to get a bit nervous having had two goals disallowed against Brentford. It's coming up to half-time, you need that opener. He's the one who shows the composure in front of goal to get it.
And it was very trademark Mo Salah, yeah, that goal, wasn't it? That was throwback Mo Salah.
That link-up he's got with Nunes as well was leading to so many goals. And he's just enjoying his football. He seems so relaxed. He's not quite as electric as he was at the start of 21-22, but he still seems to be returning the similar sort of numbers. And you think, well, he's got the consistency now that maybe he's not going to be distracted by AFCON in the new year. He certainly isn't distracted by his future. Like, that would have been easy for him to go, lose his momentum. When you've got all this talk about him, he's just going doing it on the pitch, and that's all the Liverpool need from him. Like, there's a reason why he is the one who's kept on, why Mane's gone, why Firmino's gone, and why they're mixed fortunes in Saudi Arabia, whereas Salah is the one who's still the very best player in the Premier League.
I'm going to put you both on the spot quickly on Salah. If he continues at this rate this season, finishes the season with 30-odd goals, do you still think he goes to Saudi? Theo, go first.
I don't think he can. Like, there's only one thing in the back of his head that might make him want to, and that's going to play in the Middle East as a Middle Eastern player. But he's always got that mentality to break all the records he can at Liverpool, win all these trophies at Liverpool, top European game. If you're going to get Liverpool back into the Champions League, you at least have another crack at winning it.
I don't know. But. At the end of the season, he'll only have a year left on his contract. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, what would Liverpool prefer? Another year from him? And then he walks out for nothing. Or, I mean, I know they prefer to sign a new contract, but I'm saying, if it was the two instances, would you prefer to sell him for £150 million or get another season out of him and let him go at the end?
I think this would be really interesting, wouldn't it? Because obviously Schmeichel is still there. We don't really know what the future holds for that department, but this is a huge test for Liverpool, isn't it? Because, do they try and extend his contract for just another year?
I'm not sure it's a test. I think it's more, it's ultimately down to what he wants. I think Liverpool can offer him whatever money he wants.
Well, they've got a forward plan, though, Liverpool, haven't they? They've got a plan. Yeah. If they lose Salah...
Well, the big test is in terms of if he goes. I think I meant in terms of trying to make him stay.
But, no, sorry, I meant in terms of what they do. Because if he wants to stay, can they get a deal over the line? You know, we know how much negotiating it took to get the last one. But if he doesn't want to stay... have they got the plans in place? Don't take your shoes off. Taking your shoes off in the pod. This is a podcast first. Someone taking their shoes off. You're obviously in a good mood taking shoes off. But sorry, your feet has ruined my train of thought here.
Just be glad he's wearing socks.
Yeah.
Doesn't wear socks.
Yeah.
Not an animal.
Did you not see the fan at the game at the weekend? He was in like sliders, nothing on.
It was about a million. Was it at Liverpool?
Yeah.
Was it about a million degrees below? Well, it wasn't really. It was just really cold. What was he thinking?
I don't know. Just that's why I thought I'd throw it in there.
No, well,
look at people's feet. I'm
distracted. Well, I can't even. Yeah, well, Liverpool are going to have to plan for both eventualities in the next 6 to 8 months, aren't they? So I think it'd be really interesting. And the way he's going, I mean, you just really don't want to lose this Mo Salah.
What he got as well, though, is that when it comes to the negotiations for the next contract, he's going to be 32, nearly 33, and footballers cannot go on forever. And I think
no, but they can go on to the 36, 37.
I would imagine he won't be quite as good overall when he's 30, getting towards the end of that next deal if he gets one. So Liverpool have to bear that in mind. And also, they don't, as you say, it is a tough one, but we've seen many a time every player is replaceable.
Yeah, of course.
Players are more replaceable than others. And ultimately, it's going to come down to what he wants. They might, you know, it's interesting the thing about the Saudi league. That I've heard whispers now that there's some players have gone, well, you know, the kind of the initial kind of things just worn off. And yeah, they're getting
this, this happens. It happened with China, didn't it?
Getting paid a lot of money, but the standard isn't great, although it's still better than what it was 6 months ago. And some of the crowds aren't great, even though some of the teams are getting 20, 30,000 for each game. So it's kind of not quite there yet. Whether it will be or not, I don't know, because some things, it doesn't matter how much money you throw at it, you'll never get it to where it wants to be because it just can't.
Yeah.
What I found really interesting from it is when we've had all conversations about Salah's future in the past, when it looked like he might go a couple of years ago, by staying, he's outlived the targets that they were being linked with. Like, we knew they liked Jared Bowen, and people were like a bit sceptical of that at the time, but Bowen's in the form of his life at the moment for West Ham. But he's not really someone you would look to now to sign to replace him. You want someone younger. It's that next profile of player. And if you look at who can replace Mo Salah, no one can. If you want this inverted left-footed forward on the right, he is still the best player in world football in there. So you're going to have to start again lower down, and whether that's someone from your academy or you're looking for something a bit different, it is certainly this massive challenge.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I don't necessarily think of that. It's about, I think the idea for, say, a Bowen, let's just say that they decide Bowen, is can you, I don't know what he finished last season with West Ham, but say he finished 15 goals, you'd expect Liverpool to elevate that, wouldn't you, to 25?
Yeah, but it's the age of him. Like,
Of course. But that goes for any player, I mean, you know, that you buy. What's the lad's name? Leverkusen, who is a bit of a wonder kid. Vertz, yeah. I mean, someone like him, you would think that Liverpool would hope that they could elevate him to the next level. But
then he's top of the Bundesliga. Probably going to, well, they're in the Champions League, aren't they? Yeah.
They just all go to Bayern, don't they, really?
Yeah.
But I just think it's very interesting what happens next with Salah. Obviously, as you touched on, Theo, his partnership with Darwin Nunes just seems to keep getting better. Doyle, it seemed to be you're still playing with your shoe.
I'm actually putting them back on. You're putting
them back on now.
Putting
them
back on because you've got. I would like to point out they're not totally off, are they?
They were sort of off. Yeah.
Plus they can't see it, so it's okay.
Well, the cameras aren't pointed down.
Yeah.
Great pod. Well, like, you've got to take the listener behind the scenes, haven't you? Darwin Nunes, great partnership. I felt like reading Klopp's quotes after the game yesterday. That might have been as happy as Klopp has been with Darwin Nunes, with a performance, even though he didn't score, he was very unlucky not to, but with a performance since he signed. Do you think that's fair to say?
Well, he's very good in the first half. He's the best player on the pitch in the first half. I think second half, with the game kind of won, he kind of knew that and wasn't quite involved quite as much, which didn't really matter, to be honest. But is the way we've always known that he's going to have a shot, so he loves a shot, but he's linking up much better with his teammates. And to be fair, it's been like that since the summer in pre-season, where we're over in Singapore and in Germany, and seeing those games, you could tell the signs were there. I think the other players all completely trust him now. Yeah. Not saying that they didn't trust him in the past, but it's when you have a new player come in, he's not been the best of times, it might just play on your mind a little bit, subconsciously, or unconsciously.
Unconsciously, yeah.
thank God I'm not a journalist, to use these words. So there's no second thoughts. There's no hesitation. They're just all linking up. They all know where each other is. And the interesting thing, there was one little thing that I found quite interesting in the first half, is I think Nunes, not saying he's got a free role, but he seems to have a bit of leeway, certainly when Jota's playing on the left, to kind of wander over to the left, because it happened a couple of times and Jota immediately just trotted over and went central. Mm-hmm. And I think you can't possibly do that when Diaz is out there on the left, because he's far more of a winger. And there'll be games where that's the way that Liverpool have to play it. But against Brentford, it really worked, because I thought Jota in the second half, his performance was probably even better than Nunes' overall. Mm-hmm. I gave him man of the match, although I know one or two people didn't agree with that. But tough. That was my choice.
Address the camera and say that. Yeah. Speak to the people.
Yeah, speak straight to the people.
Tough.
Put your shoes back on and tell them.
But Nunes, yeah, I think overall you can see why Klopp was happy. He defended well. He got in the right positions. As you say, he was a bit unlucky not to score twice. Sets up a goal for Salah. And once again, every time something happened, or nearly every time something happened, he was around there. And he's always that kind of player. And because of that, and he's playing with more confidence, everything seems to look a lot easier. Mm-hmm. He seems to run a little bit faster. He seems to press a little bit quicker. His passes seem to be a bit more accurate. His shooting, it's not like going miles or everywhere. I know people don't quite like that he has quite as many shots in range, but I think the keeper, they were all on target, weren't they? So he's somebody who... he is going to make a massive difference for Liverpool, and he is. And the reason Klopp was happy is because he's become the player that Liverpool bought, basically.
Yeah.
It's taken 15, 16 months to get to that point. Now no one's talking about, is Nunes good enough for Liverpool? Is he good enough for the Premier League?
Yeah.
Now it's more, okay, well, how many chances can we get him playing? And what's the best way of building a team around him?
Yeah, I mean, the assist for Salah was just, I just love that. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was really... good pass inside from Trent, great touch and just really great weight on the pass, and that is the sort of thing that Salah and Firmino used to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and we've seen this relationship between Salah and Nunes for a while now, isn't it? Like all of Salah's goals, right, all of Nunes's goals,
all
have been,
of Salah's goals,
all of Nunes's goals have been set up by Salah, and they've just in sync.
All of Nunes's assists
that's extraordinary.
The exception of one, which is one that in Europe it counts as an assist, but I think in terms of English football or the way they count, they don't count. And that's the one where you get the post.
That
counts as an assist, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, they're in sync and they've got this blossoming relationship, and it's something that sort of eyed out when Liverpool signed Nunes, because there were people looking at when Salah was at Roma, going, "Well, this is what he did with Edin Dzeko."
Yeah. Yeah.
And granted, Nunes is a better player than Dzeko in terms of the all-round package. Like, he's got a lot more pace in his locker. He seems a bit more powerful. But you can see how they just know where each other's going to be, and it works both ways. Whether it's Salah putting a through ball for Nunes to get in behind them, or it's just those little layoffs, and you know as soon as Salah's in that position, he's just going to bend it into that bottom corner. And it's what you want to see from this Liverpool attack, the fact that they've got five world-class forwards now, and it doesn't matter which one's there, they are still going to score lots of goals and know exactly where each other's going to be. Yeah, it's taken a little bit of time to get there, but that was always going to be the case after so many changes in, a year, 18 months, and now we're seeing the fruits of it. We're seeing how well they are blending together. It's not a conversation now of whether Nunes should be first choice, whether you bench him and make an impact sub. You just want him fit. You want him starting every time he's available, especially for the big games. Like when Firmino was there, you'd say he's the one you have there. Then Gakpo, he's that one, the false nine who drops into midfield and causes a nuisance. But now you want Nunes there. You want that impact, the one to get his elbows out, getting all those runs in behind the defence, and just making things happen.
And though... challenge, Doyle. Did they get that one right? Did Paul Tierney get that one right?
He did, because it wasn't a red card. It wasn't even given as a foul. No. I think that possibly could have been a foul, but I think both players were going for it. Was it Norgaard, wasn't it?
It was a classic 50-50. Coming together.
Well, it was a classic endo, slightly heavy touch, going off after the ball kind of thing. But both players went in for it. Both players went, sliding in. They both caught each other. Mm-hmm. It just happened to be that Norgaard was the one who got the heavier contact, and Thomas Frank spoke after the game, didn't he? He said, look, I don't think it's a red card. He says, but if you look at Curtis Jones's one and the other one, Marcus Rashford, if they're red cards, then that's got to be a red. But he also said, but those two shouldn't have been red cards.
Yeah,
so
I love Thomas Frank. Well, I mean, we just said this, but...
I know just Thomas Frank is Danish.
Yeah, I know. But just...
he's not German.
He just seems like a great guy.
I just wanted to put it on the pod.
Danish, German, wherever he's from. I like Thomas Frank. Yeah.
Anyway,
how did Endo play?
I thought he was all right, actually. I know I saw on social media some people said that he should never play for Liverpool again, but to be honest, they say that about every player at some point. It's a couple of useful things. One, it's on his second Premier League start. He managed the full 90 minutes, which will be massive for him, let alone anybody else. And I know you mentioned before there wasn't many options to take him off anyway, so you probably knew he was going to play the full 90. There was a bit in the start of the second half where he did a turn and he went away from Norgaard, where he kind of dummied and dropped the shoulder and went away from the Klopp, the Kop and Klopp, actually. Really
the
like,
Klopp.
Yeah, the Klopp. Really like that. But the one thing that impressed me is almost like the last minute of normal time, Brentford was still pressing, put a cross at the far post, and he got there ahead of, I don't know which player it was, but he managed to head it away. And it was only a little thing, but it kind of underlined the fact that while he'll play better games, and it was by no means a bad game, but he seems to just be kind of getting it a bit more. You know, he's positionally, he was a bit better. He wasn't trying too hard as he seemed to be in Toulouse. That was the other thing as well. And of course, playing at Anfield, he needs to probably play more games at Anfield. Yeah. I think it's where all his best games for Liverpool. Obviously, there's not been many, but you know, well, Toulouse first half, Leicester in the what's it called?
In the League Cup.
Thank you. In the League Cup.
Yeah. You're
not doing sponsorship now.
Well, you don't do you. You guys refuse to say the Emirates FA Cup.
Yeah.
So why should I use sponsors for the League Cup?
It's your favourite competition, so you should be.
I'm proud of it in any way, shape, or form.
Thank you, Kenny Dalglish.
Sorry?
That's what Kenny used to always say, anyway, shape. Yeah,
well, okay, well, I am proud of it. You know, I'm not embarrassed of the League Cup, so I don't mind getting seen out and about with the League Cup.
Though, yes, it was a decent enough performance for him. Would you start him at Manchester City? I don't know. Certainly not by himself. We've got 2 weeks of pods here, so we can come back to this, but you know, I have my opinions on what they should do against City. But playing Endo as the sole number six isn't one of them.
To tune in on next Monday's pod or next Friday's pod to hear that opinion.
Yeah, well, to be honest, that's not really what he was signed for, was it, to play at Man City? He was signed to play in games like he did yesterday and do a job. And you know, I think for him, it's about the pace, isn't it, of the football here. And slowly but surely, he seems to be improving on that. But I don't think he's ever going to be the be-all and end-all. So we'll move on.
I could just see in your face.
I had that in there before. When am I going to use it? I found it.
At least
I
didn't say what you're on about. So
yeah. Virgil van Dijk, Theo. Talking to players who've gone under the radar, and it's a theme really at Liverpool this season, but Virgil van Dijk, we had to nominate our players of 2023 the other day, and we discussed them which four, and I think we all agreed that he should be in there. But just looking at the calendar year as a whole, he's been excellent for almost the whole calendar year. Obviously had an injury at the start of it, but since he's come back, has been very, very good. Another very, very good game yesterday. He's never going to reach the levels he was 2020, but in general, I mean, there can't be many others out there doing it better than he is.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
No, definitely he is almost back to that very best level. Like, he's showing the pace now again. The players just don't want to run past him. I think that's floating around, isn't it, that people haven't got past him again this year.
Oh, really, is it?
Which is something that we all went on about in 2019-20.
It was always a bit of an anomaly then, wasn't it? You know, I think it was a stat that was massaged quite a bit, but it was also it was more about his aura, wasn't it? And I feel like he might be getting that aura back.
Yeah, like there was one moment, I think it was in the second half, when they put in Mbeumo in behind the defence and it looks like he's going to get into the box, be one-on-one, and then Van Dijk just sprints out of absolutely nowhere, gets the tackle in, and I'm not sure if he concedes the corner or manages to get out of the throw, but it's like, yes, this is peak Van Dijk. And he is getting back to these levels, and he's doing it week after week now. He's so dominant in the air. We know how good he is on the ball, but the fact that he's got that confidence now, where he's so intimidating, forwards don't know what to do against him. And it's just quite funny that he's putting this sort of performance, and you're taking notice of it a bit more before the international break. Because obviously he's going to go away with the Netherlands, and they're going to say, oh, he's a rubbish leader, whether it's Marco van Basten or some Dutch players from the 70s that not even Doyle's heard of.
And it's just, not even Doyle. That's yeah. Is that how you measure Dutch players?
Dutch players.
Yeah. But yeah, they're all going to slate him and say he's not playing very well, he's not a good leader. And then you look how he is for Liverpool, and it's like, what are you watching? He is incredible this season.
They're watching Holland.
Yeah, that might be what we'll even Ronald Koeman was saying. Yeah, even Ronald Koeman was saying he wasn't very good last week, saying he could be better as a leader. And that's your manager doing it. So at least there's not going to be anything like that at Liverpool.
Well, the thing about Koeman is that he's very much the stereotypical Dutch arrogance to him.
He's an awful manager, I think, Ronald Koeman.
He was a great player. But he's done very well to get the managerial career that he's had so far. And it continues.
Imagine him. Yeah, in managing you, he's awful.
He was manager of Everton, don't forget.
Yeah, I thought he was awful there. I think most Everton fans, I mean, they've never forgiven him for that tree. So, someone who wasn't awful yesterday was Kostas Tsimikas, Doyle.
He was okay. Yeah.
Got a
not
couple of assists.
He got a couple of assists. I must admit, I completely forgot that he'd assisted that second one because I'm going. Yeah. That's like one of those Hector Enrique assists. Yes, you can look that one up yourself, everybody.
That's your favourite assist, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Jota obviously did all the hard work there. I mean, he was terrible in Toulouse. Sorry, but he was. We can't dress that up in any way. But I think this season he's not really been anywhere near. We said this on the pod on Friday. Last 18 months, he's not been as good as he was in the 21-22 season after he'd had that full year of hardly playing and getting used to it.
Started that season really well, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm. So I think, in terms of confidence, he spoke after the game, didn't he? Spoke to LFC TV and he was talking about, he enjoyed it. And I think he kind of knew that he'd let himself down against Toulouse. And we know what he can do. You know, we know that he's a little bit defensively, he can be positionally suspect, but if he's in there creating goals, then that's the whole point of him being there. You know, that's what you want. And I think for him, it'll be just a massive confidence. But it's also settling down a little bit because he knows quite well he's going to be playing loads of games over the next couple of months, isn't it, with Robertson still out. And while we've discussed Joe Gomez could play at left back, I'm pretty sure Klopp would rather not do that. Gomez wouldn't mind, because he'd be playing. But
you wouldn't be surprised if it happened at City, though.
Again, I wouldn't be surprised by that, but then Tsimikas would still be playing 3 out of 4 games.
But again, like we said, friend, though, for Tsimikas, this is the sort of game that he needs to be available in and putting in. They don't have to be 9 out of 10 performances, but they have to be sort of 6 out of 10. He has to be. Did you give him a 7?
Yeah.
There you go. So I think for him, these are the sort of games that Liverpool need to rely on him for, and he needs to show up, and he has.
Is that a question?
I mean, that's just a statement there. Doyle's shoes are off again, but I can't control this pod.
Well, Klopp said it in the press conference, compare Tsimikas's performance before the first assist and afterwards, and it was so different there. He definitely rose to another level. He looks better physically, defensively. He wasn't out of position as much. He wasn't getting bullied as much. And that's what you want to see. You want to see him being confident, getting forward and making things happen in the final third. It was great determination to get the cross in for the second goal. And it's a simple pass for the third one, but he's still in that position. He's always a player where Liverpool are doing this inverted fullback system. It doesn't suit him as well. We knew it didn't suit Andy Robertson if he had to be more defensive, and Tsimikas is a player who's even more offensive than Robertson. But from when he gets these runner games and he gets a bit of confidence,
it can't be more offensive than taking your shoe.
When he gets the runner games and he builds some confidence, you're hoping he can get back to that level he was showing at 21-22.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Liverpool go into the international break, Doyle, a point behind Man City at the top of the table. Going into that game against City, there's no game I dread more than the Etihad. I think it's a really, really, I mean, obviously that goes without saying, it's a tough place to go, but Liverpool do struggle there a fair bit. But have City showed a little bit of weakness recently? We obviously saw they had 2 back-to-back defeats, and then they've been conceding a few goals, obviously the Chelsea game yesterday. Are there areas Liverpool could exploit?
Well, yes, but what's their record at home? They've won
every
game or something like that. So in that sense, they're still the team to beat. Then again, Liverpool are like that at Anfield, aren't they? But it will be interesting. I mean, I just had a look at Liverpool's record at the Etihad in terms of goal scoring, and I think they've been there 10 times under Klopp, and there's only been 2 games where they haven't scored. One of them was Mane got sent off after you know before half time. The other one, they'd all been on the lash for a week because they'd won the, cause they'd won the league. Yeah. So
and even the Mané one, if you remember, the before he sent off, they had quite a lot of chances.
Salah had a couple of chances. Yeah, that was when he was still very early on in his Liverpool career. Yeah, yeah. I wonder what happened to him in the end.
Yeah,
is that when people were saying he can never play for Liverpool again?
Yeah, he's gone a bit under the radar, I think. But yeah, City. Again, two things though. It's 12:30, which is always never good. And also, it's after an international break. And I know that City are in the same boat. However, City have got a lot more players than Liverpool. This is where the big squad and the standard that they've got throughout the squad, which is unparalleled to anybody, even Real Madrid, I'd say. You know, the City have the strongest squad in world football. This is where it becomes apparent. So Liverpool are going to have a mixture of players playing well and players being available. And I don't necessarily mean the ones who've been missing the last game or the last couple of games. I want about the ones getting through the international break, staying fit. Because the other thing is, these are playing for the countries, and a lot of them, these are the last World Cup qualifiers. These are big games for them.
You know, European Championships.
European Championships as well, remember that? Yeah, yeah. I've got mixed up with the South Americans. They're nowhere near. They've only just started. But no, European Championships. And now someone's going to watch this pod and go, every single Liverpool player is involved, their country's already through. Because I've not checked. It's international football.
The point you make is it's quite hard to go through.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in the international break. I mean, look what happened. Funny enough, look what happened the last one where Klopp had a go at Deschamps for saying, oh, thanks for resting Konate. You know, 3 minutes over two games. And who didn't play at the weekend?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's now not going to be playing for France over the next couple of weeks.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, so it will be a tough one, but I think it says a lot about Liverpool and this young side, doesn't it, Theo, that they've got themselves into a position where, again, I think most people would think that they're probably them and Arsenal, City's two closest challengers.
Depends who you're asking. Like, obviously, we've had a lot of people saying how great Spurs are this year because they've got a shiny new manager who's making them play best.
Shiny football. New manager, mate.
Yes, yeah. Shiny new manager, mate. Yeah. So they're always...
He's Welsh.
They're a little bit overhyped, shall we say. At Arsenal, it's still the... Well, they were so good last year, maybe they can go one step further, as Liverpool did 4 or 5 years ago. But when Liverpool are this year one with these younger players, you think, well, if they're still in the conversation now, granted we're only 3 months into the season, this isn't going to be like a one-off. They are going to be part of the conversation for years to come. They're going to get better with this experience. And while it's still debatable whether they could be as close to City come April time, the fact that they're in the situation now, when you weren't expecting them to be perhaps quite keeping the pace now, it's testament to their abilities. Like, there've been ups and downs. We've seen Tottenham. Like, if the goal that should have counted in that Tottenham game, Liverpool level with City. Like, there's small margins there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's why we've been it's been exciting watching them this season. Like, they're so much better than last year, and just enjoying them taking that step in the right direction.
Can I just go back to Van Dijk before when you mentioned?
Sorry,
I've just remembered this now. Since he came back from injury, which was it mid February or towards the end of February?
Yeah.
Liverpool have only lost 4 games since then. One of them he didn't play in, which was Toulouse. One of them was the Tottenham game, which was just ridiculous. One of them was at Man City, 4-1. And the other one was at Bournemouth, where they missed a penalty.
Yeah.
Now, that shows that Van Dijk getting back to his best and playing really well, and the change in formation, and the new attack, and the new midfield, it's like one thing after another has been put into place. And that's why Liverpool, if you'd said at the start of the season, you're playing Man City on November the 24th, is it?
5th, 25th.
Well, it may as well be the 24th, it's that early. November the 25th. And they're top, and you're only a point behind them in second place. I think back in August, certainly at full time of that game at Chelsea, everyone would have gone, you know, they go, what's happened to City? And it's like, well, actually, they've won 9 of those 12 games. They're actually doing quite well.
Well, let's finish the pod off with a really quick prediction. I haven't watched... But a third? Are we a third of the season?
It's more or less a third
of the season. What's your top 4 prediction and in what order? Go on, Theo.
City are winning it. Liverpool second. Arsenal third. Tottenham fourth.
Yeah,
City,
go on
Arsenal,
that.
Liverpool, Tottenham. Still think Arsenal got too much for Liverpool.
Be interesting. Yeah, I'm with Theo. I think Liverpool will just shade it. But
we're having Chelsea for a late run. No, don't laugh, because they've had good results against the big teams.
I think they'll recover to, say, sixth or even fifth, but I think they've given themselves a bit too much.
And then United are only 6 points behind Liverpool, even though we've had a check and they played 18 games and lost 9 of them in all competitions. How is that happened? They just don't draw.
No, they haven't drawn, have they? Yeah, City haven't drawn either.
Yeah.
Have they drawn one, have they? Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Yesterday. Sorry, I was obviously looking out before you. But yeah, I mean, I suppose that's probably is Liverpool's problem. Is like you said before, Theo, those fine margins have just not really fallen for Liverpool this season. You know, you think about Chelsea and towards the end of that game, they had a couple of chances to win it, didn't they, really? And they just couldn't get over the line. So
what was telling about yesterday's one, it had Rodri in the team. Like, I think he's unbeaten in 39, 40 games for them. Yeah. Like the two back-to-back defeats were when he was suspended. Mm. So like, if you've got a game where they're conceding four when he's supposed to be this world-class linchpin, there's something there you can get at. Whether Liverpool are capable of that, we will see in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah,
Don't forget, City still did score four goals at Stamford Bridge, which is quite
I mean, you can't argue with how dangerous they are. But I've just been saying this season, you know, a couple of defeats, the goals they've conceded, there are ways to get at them.
They were a bit like this last year, weren't they?
Yeah, but then they click into the game later in the season.
Yeah. You know, the thing for me is that I know De Bruyne has been out, but Gundogan, he's the one. They need someone to step in and be him. Mm. But I'm not sure who that's going to be because they've got enough people to choose from.
When do we start dropping in the World Cup club card as well? Like, that was when Liverpool were written off the title, going, oh, they'll be knackered when they come back. Can we start saying that? Our City will be spent at Christmas.
They weren't, were they? No. They ended up doing even better, so, yeah. Well done, Theo. You've ruined your piece you were going to write there.
It wasn't even a piece, it was just thrown out there.
We shall see. We'll wrap it up. Doyley, put your shoes back on, and we'll be back on Friday to pass the time over the international break and look ahead to that big game at City. See you then. It's all right.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.